does it mean to be moving? Now, I know that we get kind of the basic like physics understanding of that, all right? If I'm in my car and there's motion going forward, we feel like that's movement. I'm going someplace. In fact, some of you are the kind of people that you really don't care where you're going as long as you're moving. For instance, you're stuck in traffic and there's a big backup on the road in front of you and you decide, I'd rather go 10 miles out of my way just so I can be actually driving rather than wait in this line moving forward because you can't stand sitting still. Some of you, I mean, you'll go shop in the grocery store all day, but then you stand in line for like 15 minutes at Walmart and you're done. I mean, you're fed up. I can't believe I'm sitting here waiting, you know, because why? Because we love to move. We love to have forward movement in our lives. In fact, sometimes we deal with just any kind of movement. And because of that, what happens is many times we become event-driven individuals. Here's what I mean by that. A lot of organizations are event-driven, okay? There are some organizations where they've got a big fundraiser in the fall, and so they build everything towards that, or they've got a special group meeting that happens later in the winter, so they build everything towards that. So it's not so much about what happens in between, but it's about the big events. And for many of us in our lives, that's how we've chosen to live. We look forward to what the next big event is. I remember when I was in high school, it was longer ago than I'd like to admit, okay? But when I was in high school, I'm like, man, once I graduate, everything will be great. Wonderful. I mean, I won't have to live under my parents' rules. I won't have to do any of this or do any of that and everything. Then graduation came and it didn't fix everything. I mean, I don't know if any of you have come across that in your life. Maybe graduation fixed it for you when that took place, but it did not fix it for me. So I thought, you know, hey, not a problem. Once I get my degree, everything will be fixed. That's why some of you are at school right now, because once you get a degree, everything's going to be wonderful in your life. It's going to be great. And I got a degree. In fact, I got a couple. It didn't just change everything. And so, well, what's the, well, hey, as soon as I get married, that will fix everything. Everything. Besides the fact that I married a redhead, I'm just telling you, okay? I mean, it's just one of those things where it didn't fix it all. Well, hey, once we have kids, I mean, everything's going to be so great about life. We're going to have all this love to share. All, man, kids are annoying. Have you ever hung around them for very long at all? I mean, I love my kids with everything within me, and they also have the ability to just annoy the crud out of me at any possible moment. But what happens is when we begin to live our life like that, well, what's the next thing? What's the next big one? Well, as soon as I get a girlfriend, as soon as I get a new job, as soon as I get a promotion, as soon as I get a new car, as soon as I get this or that or whatever, all of a sudden we become event-driven people. And what happens with event-driven people, it's really not about movement. It's just about getting to the next place. And the next place is never as satisfying as we think it's going to be. We're going to talk for 4 weeks about what it means to find movement in our lives and what's it like to be a part of a movement. And we're going to be learning from the story of Joshua. Now, Joshua is one of my favorite Old Testament characters. Joshua is a great guy. One of the things I love about Joshua is he's a guy that learned how to lead first by being a follower. Then in a time where he was called upon, he stepped up to be a leader. He made mistakes. He was very human. He's very real, and we can kind of relate with him. But the cool thing is when we start his story really begins before he's somebody, if that makes sense. You know, sometimes we go through life thinking, well, you know, I mean, it's not like I'm the guy at the top of the ladder at work, or it's not like I'm the person that's, you know, voted most popular in my class or anything like that. And so, you know, I'm not really somebody. Well, Joshua's story begins before he's somebody. And I'm going to read today out of the book of Numbers, which I know is just your favorite book ever if you're a real Old Testament scholar. Let's learn as many things about how many oxen they had and how many weeks they traveled and all that kind of stuff. But that's where I'm going to be. I'm going to be in Numbers chapter 13, actually. I'm going to read through a few things. She's going to wait and throw some stuff up on the screen as we kind of get to specific stuff. But I want to start reading in verse 27 of Numbers and just kind of give you a little bit of backstory to what's happening in the life of Joshua. They reported to Moses, "We went into the land where you sent us. Indeed, it is flowing with milk and honey, and here is some of its fruit. However, the people living in the land are strong, and the cities are large and fortified. We also saw the descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites are living in the land of the Negev. The Hittites, the Jebusites, and the Amorites live in the hill country. And the Canaanites live by the sea and along the Jordan. Now, this is what took place. Joshua was a part of a group of 12 men. One guy was chosen from every tribe. Okay, there were 12 tribes. And these people were all people who had fled Egypt. They had all been in slavery in Egypt. Moses was able to kind of raise them up. The plagues, all that kind of stuff happened. You know, some of you have seen the Prince of Egypt movie. It's kind of close, kind of idea, right? So Moses leads them out of Egypt, and immediately they get in trouble. I mean, immediately. They leave Egypt. They're all packed up, ready to go. Pharaoh decides he doesn't want to let them go. So they find themselves between a sea and Pharaoh's army. Not a good place to be. God parts the sea. They walk across. He allows the sea to come in, crash on Pharaoh's army. Absolutely, miraculously saves them. Not only that, but God shows up in huge ways. Sometimes we say, well, you know, I just follow God if I knew exactly what he wanted me to do. Well, this is what he did for them. He led them everywhere they needed to go. He provided food for them. He did everything for them so they knew exactly where they were supposed to go, when, and why. It was great. And he led them to this place because he had promised them that he was going to provide a very special land for them to inhabit. In fact, they'd known this for generations. This is something that God was going to do for them. So he brings them to this land called Canaan. And they come up to this large river, and to cross over this river would take them into the land, but there's already people living there. There's already stuff going on. So Moses gathers together one man from every tribe or big family group, okay? And he gathers them together and says, I want you to go scout out the land and do some reconnaissance for us. So they go in kind of like an early SEAL team, you know? And they're in and they're scouting out the land, they're checking stuff out, and they begin to do something really interesting. They look at what's there. Now, I know that doesn't seem all that amazing to you, but for many of us in our lives, looking at what's there is not what we do. We look at what we want it to be. Instead of looking at where our life is at right now, instead of looking at what our situation is right now, we're always looking at what could it be? What might it be? But that's not what the spies did. The spies looked and said, hey, this is what's going on. There's really great stuff growing there. In fact, they brought some of it back with them. They showed it off to Moses and all people, grapes and other fruits and stuff like that. So, hey, the land that God's promised us has the ability to support us. Okay, that's what that means. Said, hey, there's also the descendants of Anak there. And that means it's this large warrior tribe that was there. They're strong. They're fortified, all that kind of stuff going on. And they begin to list off all the other people that live in that area. Sounds like what a spy should do. I mean, a spy should come back and tell people exactly what it is. Here's what I'm fairly convinced of when it comes to living our life. I think the reason a lot of us aren't seeing forward movement in our lives is because we're not really willing to look at where we're at. We're not really willing to look at things exactly as they are. We want to pretend like things are different than what reality is. I mean, you know what it is. I mean, you know, you instead of looking, well, this is what I make, and so this is what I should spend. Instead, we say, well, this is what I make, but I have credit cards, so I can spend this. Well, this is what I make, but you know, I mean, it's okay. I'll catch up somehow. It'll happen some other way. And so we fail to look at our reality, and it negatively affects the potential we have to move forward. Sometimes it's realities about ourselves, what we're prepared to do, what we're qualified to do, what we're educated to do, those kinds of things that are very necessary if we're going to take steps moving in jobs or moving at home and relationships and things like that. And there's this idea of, well, I just want to pretend like things are the way I want them to be rather than the way things are. So the first thing they do is they say very clearly, this is how it was. And then Caleb, this guy named Caleb, I like that name, by the way. Kind of a cool name. Caleb quieted the people in the presence of Moses and said, We must go up and take possession of the land because we can certainly conquer it. But the men who had gone up with him responded, "We can't go up against the people because they are stronger than we are." So they gave a negative report to the Israelites about the land they had scouted. "The land we passed through to explore is one that devours its inhabitants, and all the people we saw in it are men of great size. We even saw the Nephilim there. The descendants of Anak come from Nephilim. To ourselves, we seemed like grasshoppers, and we must have seemed the same to them." Now, this is what happens so often. They went in, they saw exactly the way things were, and Caleb stands up, and this is what Caleb says. "Hey, you know what? Here's the reality of it, but we can do this. We can make this happen. God has told us we're supposed to go. God has told us we're supposed to do it. And we know if we're following God, if we're doing what he's called us to do, this can take place." But then a bunch of people jump up and say, whoa. "Were you seeing the same thing we saw? Because this is what happened. I mean, we saw a really tough, rough land." I mean, they'd already just said, "Hey, this is a land that has tons of stuff growing in. It's great." But then they turn around later and say, "Well, no, this is a land that devours its inhabitants." Over here, they say it's fertile. It's got all this food and everything for them to be able to eat. But over here, they say, no way. It devours you. At first, they said, "Well, here are the people that live here." And they just kind of gave it as good information. Over here, they say, "Man, these people are so big, we're like grasshoppers." Some of you guys know Andrew Gagnon. I love Andrew, great guy. Andrew's like, I don't know, 6'14 or something like that. I mean, he's really tall, okay? And we were sitting down at a place last night, and Andrew came up to our table, and Andrew got down on one knee next to our table. And he was still like a foot and a half taller than everyone sitting at an elevated bench, okay, next to him, because he is huge. Now, I want you to know that there are not a ton of people that I go like this to and seem slightly intimidated by, okay? That just does not happen. Now, I'm not intimidated by Andrew because, let's be honest, I could snap him like a twig. But, okay, when it comes to just having to look up at somebody, that's a little intimidating to me. I am not used to having to do that. Okay, but there's no way that I'm looking up at Andrew going, "I feel like a grasshopper." That does not happen, okay? What they're trying to say is they're exaggerating, saying, "Man, this situation is so horrible. It's so terrible. There is no way we could do it." Whenever God has a plan for our life, and I want you to know that I believe that God has a very specific, incredible plan for your life and for mine. Whenever God has a plan for our life and we begin to take steps towards accomplishing that plan in our life, one of the most immediate things that begins to happen is exaggeration and fear. Well, hey, I really want you to step out, and I want you to take on this new challenge. Whoa, God, I mean, I cannot do that. I mean, I'm not prepped. I'm not ready. I don't have enough of this. I don't have enough of that. There's no way I can do that, God. Hey, I really want you to talk to this person. Oh, no way. I mean, I can't do that. And we begin to put up all these walls in our life that keep us from moving where God wants us to move, purely because we begin to think it's bigger, it's worse than I could ever possibly get through. It's kind of like in the song they sing about. It's like a mountain sitting right in front of me, when the reality is it's like a little speed bump. Not that there's not reality to it. Not that you don't have to get over it, but it's not nearly as big. It's not nearly as intimidating as we might think that it is. But it is a natural human condition of our lives to begin to exaggerate and be fearful whenever we're presented with a challenge that requires us to move forward. So here's what happened, and I want to skip ahead to the next chapter, because this really cool thing happens. Everybody starts kind of fighting back and forth, and this is what they eventually say. "Hey, why don't we appoint a new leader, and let's just march back to Egypt and see if they'll let us be slaves there again." What? I mean, they just saw the Pharaoh and his entire army wiped out. They march back to Egypt. They're dead, okay? I mean, dead in their tracks. No way that's going to work. But that's how messed up they are with fear about moving forward to where God wants them to go. And so this is what happens. I love this. Joshua, son of Nun, and Caleb, son of Jephunneh, who were among those who scouted out the land, tore their clothes. Okay, they were so distraught. I mean, they ripped their clothes. They said, man, this is so messed up. And this is what they say. The land we passed through and explored is an extremely good land. If the Lord is pleased with us, he will bring us into this land, a land flowing with milk and honey, and give it to us. Only don't rebel against the Lord. And don't be afraid of the people of the land, for we will devour them. Their protection has been removed from them, and the Lord is with us. Don't be afraid of them. We're going to spend these next few weeks talking about what it means to have movement in our lives. But before we can even think about moving forward, we have to deal with this significant issue in our lives, which is fear. Fear causes so many different things in our lives to happen. Fear immediately leads to exaggeration. Fear immediately leads to us beginning to come up with scenarios in our head. And this is how I can prove it. I'm a dad. I have a daughter who is now 12 years old. I have a son who's about to turn 11. My children, just by their nature, I mean, they're not overly fearful people. Okay, it's not like, you know, they're shying away, don't want to talk to anybody, afraid of what's going to go on or anything like that. That's not how they are, but there are certain things that they are afraid of. Now, maybe you're totally without fear. I don't know how that works, but my kids are fearful of some things. And there's one thing my son especially is afraid of. And so I finally went to him one night. I said, why are you afraid of this? I don't get it. And the thing was, he could not give me a single rational reason why he was afraid of it. So what I tried to do was I tried to rationalize with him why he should not be afraid of it. Here's the problem with that argument. Fear is not rational. And because fear is not rational, a rational argument does not deal with fear. It does not conquer fear. If I have this incredible fear of flying, panic to get on a plane. I have some family members that are that way. Oh my goodness, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? What am I going to do? But they'll hop in a car and drive across town any day of the week. Even though statistically, we know that they're about 3,000 times more likely to be injured in a car wreck than they ever are in a plane crash. But see, if I just go to them and I say, well, you know, statistics would tell us that you should not be afraid of flying in a plane because you're far more likely to be injured in a car wreck. First of all, they're going to look at me like I'm an idiot because I'd be an idiot for saying that to them, okay? Secondly, they're probably going to use some smart aleck remark where like, well, yeah, but at least, you know, if you get in a car wreck, you got a chance of living. You're in a plane accident, you're gone, you're toast, whatever. You know, that's immediately where people go with that one. But see, because the rationale is just so different. It doesn't matter that one mode of transportation is really significantly safer than the other. There's just this irrational fear inside of them that keeps them from moving forward. Sometimes in our lives, it's about relationship choices. We're so afraid to take that leap. We're so afraid to take that step. Sometimes it's at jobs or at school with our families, whatever it might be. But there is this fear that holds us back. I want you to see something about Joshua and Caleb in this particular situation. When the people began to get fearful, they didn't say, hey, your fears are irrational. They didn't say, you shouldn't be fearful. They never once said that. This is what they said. The land is good. The opportunity is there. But there's significant danger. They said, yeah, the people that live there are big. It's going to be hard, but their protection has been removed from them because our God is with us. And our God wants us to have this land. And if we will move forward, if we will not rebel against him, if we will not turn away from him, he will be faithful to us. And we will conquer the land. See, it wasn't that they were presenting a rational argument. They were presenting an emotional argument saying, yes, there are significant challenges, but our God is bigger than any challenge we could face. When my kids were little, they watched these movies called VeggieTales. Dumbest thing ever created on the face of the... Seriously, a talking cucumber? I mean, come on. And they're hilarious. I love them, okay? I mean, I absolutely love them. I got sad when my kids got older and didn't watch them anymore because I missed Larry, okay? I just did, all right? And in one of the shows, there's this little kid, Junior, and Junior's scared. And he sings this song, and it cracks me up every time I think of being fearful. It says, God is bigger than the boogeyman. Some of you are singing it in your head right now. Stop it, okay? Okay, don't do it. You're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to sing anything from the Frozen soundtrack, okay? Both those things are banned, all right, okay? But this is what happens. Junior recognized that it's not that there wasn't this fear present in his life, but that his trust in God was greater than his fear. His hope in God was greater than his fear. And that's what Joshua clearly lays out to his people. He says, look, the challenges are real, but God is bigger. God is stronger. Our hope is in him. How many times in our lives do we face issues that are real? I'm not trying to say they're fake or made up or they're not important or anything like that. Some of you are here today and you have significant financial challenges in your life. Some of you are sitting here going, how am I ever going to come back next semester for school because I don't know how I'm going to pay for it. Some of you are looking at a mortgage payment and you're going, I don't know how it's going to work. Some of you are trying to pay off loans and you're stuck under credit card debt and this kind of stuff and that kind of stuff. And I tell you what, those are realities of life. And I'm not beginning to tell you that they don't matter or they're not big. But I'm telling you, if you want to find forward movement in your life, God is bigger than those issues. Some of you are here today facing relationship stuff that is absolutely crippling you. You're in the midst of a broken relationship or you're heading in that direction or you're struggling with somebody at work or at home. And I want you to know that those situations are real, they are valid, and they are scary. But God is big enough to handle it. Some of you are dealing with stuff at work where you're going, I'm not sure how I'm going to make it another month. I can't handle this supervisor. I can't meet the quotas. I can't do this. I can't do that. I'm sick of dealing with the parents, whatever it might be. I just want you to know that those situations are real, and I will never attempt to minimize them, but I want you to know there is a God who is so much bigger than those situations, who is willing to work in and through your life so that you can see forward movement in your life. We spent the last 6 weeks talking about what our identity should be. In fact, John was messing with me this morning. He said he missed 1 week and Kyle and I switched identities because I don't have hair now and Kyle does. Okay, so just trying to give you a hard time there. If my identity of God, if my true identity, the one that I most identify with, is being a child of God, then those things that begin to scare me, those things that begin to make me think before I really take the leap of faith that God wants me to do, I recognize that my daddy is bigger than what scares me. Here's how I know it. Very first time that we ever really went swimming with Caleb, he was this itty bitty little guy, okay? I know it's hard for you to imagine now, but at one time he was like this scrawny little runt. And it was so fun. So we're swimming at this pool that's on the top of a massive hotel in St. Louis. You could look down and see Busch Stadium, John. You could see where the Cardinals are going to lose a bunch of games this year, all right? And so we're up there. We're looking down on the stadium, and there's this rooftop pool, and it's really cool. And so I looked at Caleb. I said, Caleb, you ready to jump in the water? Caleb, you want to swim? Just jump in the water. Rachel looks at him and says, well, if daddy jumps in, will you jump in? But once I jumped in and I was in the water, guess what he did? He jumped to me. I put my hands up and he jumped and I caught him. Because even though he was afraid of jumping in the water because the pool was deeper than what he was used to swimming in, his fear of that was less than his trust of me. Some of you have seen it. You got a little kid who's scared of the dark at night. But if you go in and you lay down next to him for 5 minutes, what do? I mean, they're asleep. Why? Because their fear of the dark is less than their trust of their parent. Some of you are struggling in school and there's a class that's just absolutely killing you and you're afraid you're not going to make it, but yet there's this professor that spends time and helps you and your trust in them is greater than your fear of failing the class. You see, over and over in our life, we experience this. And God says, I want you to move forward in your life. I want you to move forward in relationships. I want you to move forward at work. I want you to move forward in all these different areas of your life. I want there to be movement. I don't want you stuck still. And I know it's going to be scary. I know there's going to be difficulties and there's going to be challenges and there may even be giants in front of you. But trust me, I am bigger than the challenges you might face. I am bigger than the struggles that you might encounter. These next couple weeks, as we really dig into the story of Joshua, we're going to look at really practical, upfront ways of how we can see movement happen in our lives. But I felt it was really important today just to kind of set the stage. Because if we're honest about it, the thing that holds us back the most from moving forward is fear. I mean, it's fear. And especially for us guys, we don't like to admit that because that's not a very macho thing to do, all right? But I'm telling you, we're as fearful as anybody else. Am I going to be able to provide for my family? Am I going to be able to get the job I'm supposed to have? Am I going to be able to make things work? We take that on our shoulders and we are afraid of what might happen. But God says, I am bigger, I'm stronger. Nate's going to come up with the band and they're going to play that song for us one more time. They did. Most of us know that we need to move. Most of us know that where we're at right now is not where we need to end up. Most of us have no problem admitting that we can't stay stuck where we're at. I love that in the video we watched before we began. What's it like when you feel stuck and you just can't move forward? I want you to know that Joshua's story gets worse before it gets better. In Joshua's story, the people say, you know what? We're not listening to you. We're way too afraid of what's happening over there. So God says, you know what? I'm not going to force you. I'm not going to flip the light off on you and shut the door. I'm not going to do that kind of stuff. But here's what's going to happen. You're going to wander. And instead of moving forward, you're going to be stuck in the middle of the wilderness for 40 years. Now, I'm not going to leave you. I'm going to provide for you. I'm going to take care of you, but you're going to be stuck. And I'm telling you right now, there is no worse feeling than being stuck. But God doesn't want you to stay stuck. God provided a way. We're going to talk next week about how Joshua gets the opportunity to lead people out of being stuck into the very place that he'd gone and looked at with his own eyes and said, I know it's big, I know it's challenging, but I'm telling you, we can do this. Not because of what we can accomplish, but because our God is bigger than our challenge. Our God is bigger than our struggle. So here's what I want you to do. While these guys are playing, I just want you to bow your head where you're at. Not because that's an overly spiritual thing, but just so that you're focused on yourself and what's going on there, not worried about what the person next to you is thinking or saying or doing. And as they begin to talk with us, as they begin to sing these words for us, would you just identify what that fear is in your life that's keeping you from moving forward? Just say, God, I'm not big enough to do it, but God, would you move in this situation? Or God, would you help move me around it? God, I don't want to be stuck in fear. I want to be moving where you want me to go. fact that the only way we truly have that trust, the only way we truly have that connection to allow Him to be bigger than our situations is for us to truly have that relationship with Him. See, Caleb didn't jump in the water to me because I was just a guy in the water. Caleb jumped in the water to me because I was his dad. We were in relationship. And here we believe that the greatest relationship we could ever have is a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. The only way this works is through Him. We're going to be talking these next few weeks about what that really means to be connected with Him, to be in relationship with Him, so that we can find movement in our lives. Thanks so much for being here today. I hope you had a great time. I hope you had an awesome time of worship. I hope most of all, you're able to connect with folks and connect with God. And I pray this. I pray that as you leave this place, that you would be encouraged to not let fear command and run your life, but she would look to Him to help guide you through those situations that seem so difficult to overcome. If this was your first time here today, thanks so much for being here. I hope you had a good time. As you're leaving today, stop by the Welcome Center. Say, hey, it was my first time here at Journey. They'll give you a little gift just as a way for us to say thanks for coming and checking us out. Hope you choose to come back and be with us again sometime. Don't forget, if you were here last week and took the challenge to be inviting some folks to come be with you, hope you're wearing your band. If you didn't get one of these last week, grab one at the door on the way out today. They'll be back there for you. Just a great little reminder. I was sitting in Starbucks. I know that shocks you that I was at Starbucks, okay? But I was sitting in Starbucks this week, working on the computer, looked down, it's right there, had somebody walk in that I've been connected to for a long time. I just never said, hey, would you come check it out? And so we got to have a great conversation about stuff. So it's a great reminder. Grab one of those before you leave today. Hope you have an awesome day. Hope you have an even better week. And we'll see you back here next week, ready to worship again. See you later.